welcome to Cinemarathon, the Movie Marathons podcast where we watch a series of movies all in one day and then discuss them afterwards. My name is John, and joining me for this special Halloween edition of Cinemarathon, we have Mini Agent here. We have Josh.
Trick or treat, motherfucker.
And we have Manny.
Josh just stole my line.
And by the way, this is Manny's first time on the podcast.
1B, I guess we could call it.
Yeah, yeah. Manny, unfortunately, was with us during our long ago Rambo podcast that actually we recorded and in it. Shit the bed, basically.
Right.
And we had to re-record it. So you did.
As a side note, I have been to many a Cinemarathon.
Yes.
Just not
yes,
the podcast.
He has. Yes. And then, of course, we have Pat.
Welcome, Manny.
And we have Matthew.
Everybody's dead. We got to get the fuck out of here.
I guess I won't ask what everyone's favorite movie was, but
Freddy boy, you did it again.
So it was an interesting month because we posted a poll actually for what we would do for Halloween, and it was really close. Like, yeah. So we had posted it was either going to be the Chucky movies or the Halloween movies. And it was like a squeaker all the way to the last day. And then by something like 52%, I think Halloween took it.
It was one vote.
Yeah. Which I think it was like two votes.
Two votes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which is crazy. But so for those of you that actually participated in our poll, thank you. And for those who wanted Chucky and had their dreams crushed, obviously we've heard the people. It seemed also a popular choice, and that may be something we revisit in the future.
I'm very much looking forward to the Chucky.
Oh, I know. Well, Manny, you were the one that told me, like, oh, well, let's do Chucky. So I'm sorry we didn't get to do it time. But
In hindsight, I wish we had done Chucky.
What?
I'm glad they had this one done though. Yes. Under our belts.
So the winner, the champion of Halloween, was of course Halloween.
Yeah.
Which there's 10 movies in total. Big whopping 10. Let's see if I get my memory works as I go down the list. There's the original Halloween, then Halloween 2, Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. With no Mike Myers, yeah. Which was news to me.
Season of
I
no
didn't
Michael
realize,
Myers.
So I think oh, right, about half yeah. an hour in.
Yeah, you didn't even know that. That was amazing.
And also no witch.
Yeah, none. Well, it goes
warlock.
Like warlocks.
Warlock, yeah. It counts.
Then there's Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. Then Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. It's not Halloween 6, it's just Halloween Curse of Michael Myers. And then following that, there's Halloween H2O, 20 Years Later, Halloween Resurrection.
Woo! Woohoo!
And then after that, there are the Rob Zombie remake films of Halloween and Halloween 2.
I will not acknowledge
these. Abortions! Abortion!
Yeah, it's a house divided on those, because I know, Pat, you're a fan, right? So
I tolerate them at best, and I like them, like, half as much as I should.
Yeah, well, I know there's a lot of hate in this room. Yeah. Well, we'll get to those in 2 months from now when we finally get to that part of the series. But I guess before we delve into each movie, like, specifically, did you guys have anything you want to talk about Halloween in general? What it meant to the genre and you and your lives?
Aesthetically, Michael Myers is very bizarre to me and always has been. And mostly just because the thing that he's wearing, unlike Jason who wears a hockey mask, it doesn't resemble a person specifically. It's something that you see people wear sometimes and he's repurposing it. But Michael Myers is wearing a face that looks like a face.
Right.
And that is so strange. And to be honest, it's better in small portions. The fact that he's wearing a blank expression face, and behind that, Dr. Loomis tells us he has no feelings, he has no emotion, he's just evil. So we can reason that behind that face is another face that also does not react.
Mm-hmm.
It boggles my mind whenever I think about it too much.
It is an interesting, it's like a dynamic, because if there's a person that's that dead and that evil that you wouldn't necessarily even need a mask to begin with. So
right.
It could just be the face of the person who's actually trying to haunt you. But no, it's an interesting observation. I'd never thought of that before.
Yeah. I don't know how you guys feel. Cause for me, you know, everyone has different roads to being a horror lover. I think it's safe to say like most of us are like horror movies or pretty much into them.
Agreed. Yes. Quite a bit. Yes.
For me, my sort of gateway into slasher movies was kind of, I guess, started with the Friday 13th and Jason as just sort of like an interesting, fun thing. And then I remember going, oh, I should watch this Michael Myers guy. And then when I saw the first Halloween, it like scared the fucking shit out of me. It was like totally legit. And so for me, Michael Myers has always been like the number one killer. Mm-hmm. Like he's been my favorite of those sort of, because you got him and Jason and Freddy and, you know, arguably some others, Pinhead and whatnot.
Yeah.
Leatherface is actually on that level, I'd say.
Yeah, sure, yes. Sure. But, and while he might not have the best like movies, like head to toe, like if you stack them all together, like I don't know. There's something about the Halloween series I just love. And I was secretly like really happy that we got to do that one. Cause you know, Matthew, like, when we did James Bond, you talked about that was a dream of yours for many a year. I have kind of wanted to do the Halloween marathon since I was a kid.
Oh, cool.
And I was really happy we got to do it. Unfortunately, we had to do Rob Zombie along with it, which was not part of my dream.
Yeah, but we should have done it like 6 years ago.
2006. Yeah, 2006. Yeah.
That was the sweet spot. So anyway, thank you, dear listeners, for allowing my dream to become a reality. I really appreciate it.
Crushing mine.
Well, actually, what's interesting, you're talking about how you grow up with horror and what brings you in. And I actually don't have a distinct memory of being a little kid and like the movie that made me like love horror. Because when I was little, I watched a lot of R-rated stuff. I really wasn't censored that much. So I just sort of had access to everything. But I don't have a distinct memory of like the movie that brought me into horror. I guess some of my earliest memories of being like really into stuff was like Evil Dead. That was probably like one of the things that really changed my perspective on it. But I don't have a distinct memory of seeing the first Halloween. Like I know I had seen it, but it didn't. I'm not gonna say it didn't resonate with me because I know I liked it. It just didn't like stick onto my psyche as like that's like one of the best horror movies I've ever seen. It wasn't until I was older that I appreciated it more for what it was. And I think it's just because I didn't realize how much it changed movies when it came out, like our horror movies. Like, cause I had seen slasher stuff. So I had seen all the like derivatives of Halloween and didn't realize that Halloween was like the beginning point sort of a lot of that type of movies.
Right.
So it sort of just felt like another slasher movie. But once I got older and cared about horror and started to learn more about it, that's when it sort of like became something for me. But over the course of those years, I had only seen Halloween 1, Halloween Resurrection and the first Rob Zombie. So my experience with Halloween was all the great stuff except for Rob Zombie. You know, it was like I hit the exact two marks.
I love you have Resurrection with the great stuff.
Oh, it is. It's easily number two in the series for me.
No, well, it's enjoyable. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
But I love it. But it was interesting that I like did like 1, 2, skip a few right to Halloween Resurrection and was just like had such a positive like emotional reaction to the series. And then we did the marathon and there's actually some good stuff in there, but overall I think as a series it doesn't like it's not that strong.
Sure.
But
I could almost draw a parallel, honestly, just while we're on the topic of Resurrection being the second best in the series, is almost kind of like the Evil Dead 2 of the series, when like the first one is like a horror movie and the second one is like very funny and silly.
Right. I think my only counter to that, and obviously we can get deeper into
I'm not like it's not an absolute. Yeah. It's just kind of a comparison.
Well, I would say I laugh at Halloween Resurrection. I wouldn't say I laugh with Halloween Resurrection.
That's true. I don't know.
Evil Dead 2, like they are very intentionally.
I think there is
Three Stooges stuff. Yes.
I think it's a 50-50 split on being laughed at and being laughed with, because it clearly isn't taking itself too seriously.
Well, I doubt anybody except for maybe Busta Rhymes was thinking that the trick or treat motherfucker and all that kung fu stuff was a legit like we're making art here.
Yeah, and obviously I mean,
Michael Myers.
And it's obviously, it was post-Scream era, so obviously there was a level of self-awareness and meta that came into it, especially considering it was a reality show, and there, you know, like Busta Rhymes in the Myers mask. So there was some element of that movie that I think was aware. Not all of it, obviously.
But let's not get too ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we'll get to that much later.
Yeah.
But we should probably get started with, of course, the very first movie in the Halloween series, which was Halloween. So, I mean, I don't know how you guys feel. I'm going to throw this out there. I think it's still obviously the best one by like a landslide victory.
By far,
any of these movies. That movie's
not even close.
Great.
It's Halloween 2.
It's not convoluted.
Rob Zombie's Halloween 2.
It's not convoluted. It's the first, I think it's what popularized slashers. I don't think it was the first one, but it's definitely like the one that like made them a thing.
Yeah, put it on the map. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's really scary.
Yeah, and I think still really works in a lot of ways. Like a lot, because to me, what I think the cool part of the movie is it's not bad when he starts killing people and stuff, but to me, it's working its best when he's just stalking in the background and just being a creep.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not really that bloody a film.
Yeah.
If you think about it, I mean, there's not even that many kills, but it's just these instances and these visuals, especially that Carpenter creates, that are just like, you know, they're seeing him from afar and he's just standing there. He's not doing anything.
Yes.
And you're like, what the hell is this creepo doing?
They're the most calm high school students I've ever seen. Because if I saw that dude, I'd just be like running through the hall screaming.
Yeah, they do a good job of also, since it's on Halloween, like he sets the mood as it's fall and everything. Right. Like everything, there's always spooky decorations out and there's like always leaves blowing through shots and stuff. And there's these long... They use what people don't really use nowadays, which is a wide-angle lens
sure.
to show things.
And it's used well.
Yeah, and it's nice. Actually, I was going to say, the first time I watched this, I saw it on Monster Vision with Joe Bob Briggs.
Yeah!
And so it was interesting because I basically saw it as it is, just minus the boobs, which is just too bad. But like the violence, like you said, is not that bad, so I actually saw everything. But it was a really awesome way to see it for the first time. Except for the censorship, but I love me some Joe Bob and some Monster Vision. So that was always that's a fond memory of mine.
As do I.
Well, like you were saying, that it's not Manny, that it wasn't that bloody a movie. Like, it's interesting. It's not as deep as something like Hitchcock, where it's like all this like inferred violence, because there's obviously on screen kills. But yeah, when you think about like an iconic movie about a slasher, and for it to be that sort of tame in the blood department is interesting, because it does affect people really quite deeply. I mean, I know my mom said she saw this in theaters, that it was like she was on the floor of the theater, like, you know, like she was just so scared.
I can't imagine that. I guess I've just held my soul underwater and just killed it, because like nothing gets a rise out of me now. I watch this stuff and I'm like, yeah, it's cool, I'm gonna go to bed, like immediately.
Sure.
Like fine, no problem. But like some people just like can't handle it.
Yeah.
Just like a good consumer should, Josh. We all have.
Right, but what year is it? 78, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds right.
Really, what movie at that point has that sort of character with that sort of threatening?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like Matthew said, like there were slasher movies, it was definitely a genre, but I think this is obviously the one that kind of hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
The best, actually, because Stu would actually have my head if I didn't mention, because he of course has an axe to grind with Halloween, like he does with everything. But
what's up, Stu?
Shout out to Stu. I'll try to channel Stu Che right now, but if he was here, he would immediately start talking about a movie called Black Christmas, which was actually remade a few years ago. But that is very much a slasher movie, and actually very similar to
predates Halloween.
Yeah, definitely by a few years. And it's not so much the entire film, but the kind of opening scene, which is very famous of like kid Michael Myers POV moving around killing, is very similar to the aesthetic that's in that movie Black Christmas. Like in Black Christmas, it's a serial killer, and pretty much the whole time you're with him, you're kind of POV on him. And
actually, but you're not. But what I would have to defend Halloween on is that I don't have any memory of Black Christmas and the killer being an on-screen of intimidation. Like because Halloween, the first movie, has that one opener that's all about POV, but the rest of the movie is completely separate.
Yeah, it's a completely different beast.
Yeah.
And I totally agree. But I think that beginning really sets a good mood.
Absolutely.
And I don't really look at it as like a ripoff or anything. I just see it as kind of like homage.
Yeah.
I mean, in fact, actually, like just the other night, many of us in this room went and saw a Dario Argento film named Profondo Rosso, or Deep Red, and that also had a killer.
Yeah.
With a lot of POV and stuff. Like it's hardly something that's like brand new.
Yeah, you can't give that all to Black Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'd like to say one of my favorite examples of camera work that also makes Michael Myers very intimidating and is still effective for me to this day, is that early on
once Michael Myers gets into Haddonfield, he's placed closer to the camera, and the primary characters who are watching him or being stalked by him are far in the distance, making him bigger than them larger than them.
I think those are actually the scariest parts of the movie.
Yeah.
When he's nearby and he's just watching, and you see Jamie Lee just walking slowly, has completely oblivious to the fact that this man wants to kill her.
Yeah, or there's stuff like when the kid walks out of the school and you're just in the car with Michael Myers as he's like...
Right, right. That honestly is probably the scariest scene to me. Personally.
It's fucked up. It's just so creepy.
I'm going to say they're all really scary. Every time he's just standing there being a creeper, it's pretty rough. Pretty rough. But I do like... I really do like the way this movie looks, and Carpenter for me, actually, if you were to ask me, is probably my favorite horror director, just because In the Mouth of Madness for me is like one of my favorites,
sure,
and one of the only really good H.P. Lovecraft adaptations, so that's important to me. But what I learned in looking up this movie on IMDb was that the cinematographer was Dean Cundey. And I had heard the name before, but I had never really associated what his movies or what his body of work was. And it's literally like from 1975 to like 1995, like he lensed my favorite looking movies ever made. Like he just has a style that connected with me growing up. Like this movie, basically everything Carpenter did, which I'm now learning, I guess, is a lot of the credit I gave to Carpenter really probably should be given to Cundey, because it's his look. And but he did like Jurassic Park, the Back to the Future trilogy. I mean, we're talking like stuff that just like when you think about movies and
movies magic
that
shaped all our lives.
Yeah, yes. Like there are the visual style of
Matthew.
Like,
I think
generation.
You're neglecting a very important entry, which is of course Steven Spielberg's
director's
CD-ROM
chair.
Game. Steven Spielberg's director's chair.
Oh, I don't leave that out. That is an important
video
foundation.
Game. That's a good one.
So many other friends of mine played director's chair.
It's amazing. Oh, yeah. It's really goofy. But
actually, you know what's great? I mean, like, side note, because I'm an editor, that was my first sort of like digital editing experience at all.
Oh,
was
wow.
That game, and I would edit with that game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just Quentin Tarantino in prison, and that was it. But, you know, it was
yeah.
Cool. Anyway, check it out on eBay, guys. Steven Spielberg's director's chair. It's a good one.
But yeah, it was just interesting for me to go all those years thinking, it's like, oh, John Carpenter is one of my favorites because like that's the way he makes movies look, and then to realize it's really this other dude. But I think the strength of Halloween is the way it's shot. I'm not even going to give credit to Michael Myers as a figure, like, because he's just sort of absent, like you were saying, you know, there's not much there to him. It's really just how he's placed in the frame and how Haddonfield is filmed. And I think that's what sort of set it apart.
Any town, USA?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. And I think their sort of look of him where they seem very interested in making his eyes like dead
dark
and black,
yeah,
which is a mistake that a lot of later movies, they kind of seem to get lazy on that. Like you can always kind of see the guy in the mask and his real eyes. And actually, as much as I like it a lot, Halloween H2O really has that issue where you can like see his eyes constantly.
It is a shame.
Yeah, but he just looks like a skull or something. Like I think that's a really cool way to shoot him.
Well, a lot of later movies too, I think, have this idea that is opposite of what Halloween was trying to give, which is like Michael Myers is empty and absent. Whereas a lot of slasher movies are about like the killer is wild, you know, this frenzied,
right,
like maniac type thing. So you see the eyes behind the mask and it's like, you know, it's all scarry and, you know, they're, you know, his eyes are darting around like that type of shit, which is ends up being less interesting because there's too much to read into it. Like the second you interpret the killer, this is the second he becomes familiar and, you know, and not as scary. But
that's interesting because, I mean, by saying that, to me, you put into perspective that Michael Myers has control of his whole thing.
He's like a Terminator. If a Terminator was a person, like he's unfazed by everything and he just wants to do what he wants to do. And like, he just keeps doing it.
Sure. And I feel like we should talk a bit about his hype man, you know, Donald Pleasance. In case it was unclear that he's an empty, killing, horrible person, Donald Pleasance continually lets us know.
If you ever forget
over
what you're doing in the movie.
And over and over again.
I like how, because there's all these scenes with him and the sheriff, and the sheriff seems like not that concerned about Michael Myers.
Yeah.
He keeps wanting to blow Donald Pleasance off. And I keep thinking like, dude, it's an escaped mental patient. Like, you should probably listen listen to this guy. It's just so strange.
Yeah, and his daughter ends up getting slaughtered as a, I know. As a result.
That's actually a really tough scene to watch, too, because he's taking it pretty hard. Oh, we should talk a bit about his daughter. We were sort of joking. She's kind of the bitchy friend of Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah, she's the curly-haired one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Well, she's super cute.
We were having a big laugh about her, because I didn't remember her performance that much, but she's very, like, curt and straightforward and blunt. And
she's the one who was smoking a joint while driving the car, and then she pulls up to her dad on the sidewalk, and she thinks that he won't be able to tell or that he's not wise to what she's doing just by putting the joint out of sight.
Or he's a terrible cop.
Yeah. I like to think he's just sort of looking the other way. Like, I mean, he probably smells it. It's just like...
I mean, they were hotboxing in there for a good 20. There's no way that didn't waft out when they pulled up.
Michael Myers just leans over like, pass that shit, man.
Yeah, she tries to pass the blunt back and Michael Myers takes it. What a great reveal. I'm going to put that in a movie.
Talking about cutting the tension short. Like,
yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah, two of these characters, which is Laurie and then her friend Annie, I think. They're both babysitting for the night, and I took great pleasure in imagining that Annie is actually the one who's being babysat by the one that she's supposed to be babysitting.
Oh, by the kids.
Because oh yeah, she's incompetent.
She
yeah.
spends so much time stuck and trapped by Michael, and then she inevitably has to call for help, and so a lot of time from her is spent calling out Lindsay, and it got really funny and annoying quickly.
Yeah. Well, especially when she literally gets stuck
in a window,
and she, what is it? It's like her butt gets caught in this thing that slides down, and she just can't get out.
She's just got like both of her legs like akimbo in the air, right. And she like her top half is hanging outside of this garden house or something.
She's trying to crawl out of the window
because Mike was behind her, but then he decided like. No, I'll get this shit later. Just like leaves.
Well, that's a funny bit because she turns to the girl and is like, don't tell anybody about this. And first thing, like when the phone rings.
Yeah, she's like, she got stuck in the window.
She got stuck like immediately. Yeah. It's pretty good.
But yeah, she's a cool character actually, but she does come off very bitchy. And it makes you wonder why Laurie even hangs out with her. She's not nice to her at all. You know, and then even what tells Ben, what's his name, Ben Kramer or Schramer?
Yeah.
That
he likes Laurie.
Yeah, that she like thinks he's cute and like it's like devastates Laurie. And she's just like not a good friend.
Laurie's life actually kind of sucks straight up. Like she's sort of this prissy, like do good who's watching her friends' backs. Like they're all babysitting and they drop their kids off.
Or just boning.
In other people's houses.
Mm-hmm. In their beds.
Their beds, which is really weird. I mean, the 70s might have been a different time and all, but it just seems really inappropriate. Freedom, man.
Yeah, that struck us as so odd because, they're in a stranger's house. They're not even the babysitters.
Yeah.
And then, just in the bed, boning. Although that leads
and
to
not
a really,
even like a guest room, it's the master bedroom.
Yeah. But that leads to a kind of one of the funny moments with Mike, where he puts on the cloth and pretends to be a ghost.
And the glasses
and puts the guy's glasses on.
Yeah,
that you're talking about. He has nothing inside, but he's quite the jokester.
Yeah, because he then later sets up, like you said, a haunted house for that, like in that room where there's just like bodies hidden around.
Right,
precariously.
He's real into setting up booby traps for bodies to drop. Do you think he's spending like an hour just like wood carving,
delicately setting like wires, like and
so
stuff.
They all?
I think it's fallback. His interior decorator. He would have to.
I would love to watch a movie that's just everything that Michael Myers was doing when the cameras weren't on him in the previous films, because he just gets around. He Pepe Le Pew's. He's just always doing like these crazy things that you never see. You only see the result of. It's interesting.
That's another aspect of Myers that I think makes him seem otherworldly or sort of more intimidating than just a man. And we joked about it because we called it like he's the master of red light, green light. Because it's just like the second you look at him, like he's like frozen and there's just nothing, but you blink and he's just gone. It's like I like to imagine that in those periods where the camera's turned away, he's literally booking it, you know, just like huffing and puffing to the next scenario. But it's a very strange attribute for a killer, because usually you see the pursuance is like the most important aspect of the fear. But in this, it's just, the element of surprise, I guess.
One of my favorite instances of that is at the very end of the movie when Dr. Loomis has fired 6 bullets into Michael, and he falls off the balcony and lands on the lawn outside. He's lying on the floor, and then Dr. Loomis and Laurie go inside, and they're not looking at him anymore. And then come back outside, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very last moments of the movie is hearing him breathing still.
Yeah. Yeah.
And showing rooms that he's been in, locations that he's been in, but he's not there, but we can hear him.
Yeah.
He's everywhere.
He's everywhere. Which and I'll just put this out right now. I'm sure it doesn't almost go without saying, but I think the sequels are the worst thing about this whole series. Because if this movie just still stood on its own, it's perfect.
Definitely.
Because leaving it like that, we don't know if he disappeared, if he vanished, or if he did get up and walk away.
Or, yeah, and if he's supernatural, right. or just a human.
Yeah.
You know, there's so the questions that are involved with Myers as an icon,
yes.
were better left uninvestigated.
Well, I mean, he's part of the Thorn Society.
Oh, my God.
Race. I mean, what's the question?
No. It's his mom in his head telling him to do things like, and with his younger self like, in tow.
Yeah. That pony has been telling him what to do all this time.
But I think that's the problem with a lot of the sequels is where do you go from the first movie? And then what you're left with is maybe we can try to explain why Michael Myers is doing what he's doing. And it inevitably isn't as good as it's just not knowing at all.
It just comes off as having your cake and eating it, too. Because
Definitely. They
always do these terribly elaborate, like, definitive, killed Michael Myers 1,000 times over things, and then he's not dead, and then they just go, but he's just a guy. Like, he's just a guy. Until they start doing the Thorn Cult stuff and stuff, yeah.
I have to give Michael Myers credit as well. I believe, even though Jason does this too, he seems to me the first guy that just kind of walked to his kills.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And I love that they stick with that. He just sort of is not in a hurry to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah. Man.
Even post-Scream, I mean, we're moving on, but even post-Scream, he still walks.
Yeah.
And they totally pointed out in Scream, like,
right. Yeah, that's actually worth mentioning as well, because you mentioned that in Scream, you know, they're watching Halloween. I think it's cool that, because in Halloween, they're watching, I think it's like Scream Thing from Another
Thing
World.
From Another World.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm talking, yeah.
Yeah, later on.
Much later.
Yeah, it's, well, it's just sort of this reoccurring thing in a lot of horror movies where in the horror movie, there's another horror movie on screen. I bet you could, we could like kind of maybe even do a marathon of like, you watch a horror movie and then you watch the horror movie
that they're watching and then you watch the movie that they're watching in that movie.
I bet it could be done.
That would be really
interesting. Any listeners out there who want to take this project underway,
we're not going to research it, but if you yourselves do the hard work.
I might start researching.
Yourself, yeah. There might be some people here that are going to
research. I might start researching.
Yeah,
6 degrees of voyeur character, whatever.
And then it all just comes back to Night of the Living Dead every time.
Of course it does.
Because it's like free to use, so...
For me, I think this is actually one of the best things about this movie is the soundtrack. That it's just the most iconic horror score
definitely.
In film history.
Absolutely. And it really stays with you as you hear it and continue. I mean, obviously watching 10 movies.
Yeah, watching hearing it over 10 movies.
Did we hear the Halloween theme? I don't know. Did it play? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, later on, absolutely, because you start to tune it out because you just hear it so often. It's like white noise, but it's the end of the 10 movies.
But it's so effective. I mean,
it's real good.
So simple.
That's what John Carpenter is like. I mean, he's really good at a lot of things, but he's really good when he does the score of just doing like very simple but very cool scores.
It's a trademark, in fact, I would say, for his better movies.
And I also love that it's done. I mean, this is me being a music geek geeking out here, but I love that it's done with like these really simple 70s synthesizers.
It's a trademark to what eventually became like a Carpenter sound. And I've read interviews with him, and apparently he didn't want to do movies originally. He wanted to be
He wanted to be a musician. Yeah.
And he kind of swung and missed at music, and so he went into movies instead. It's interesting because later on, for me, Carpenter soundtracks become sort of derivative of themselves. Like, you know, it's like there's a Carpenter sound and then there's like Carpenter trying to sound like Carpenter. But this is like the soundtrack for me in horror history, which
I think
is cool because it's just, it's so simple and it's so effective. And it's just like the first movie is just very, like, there's no fat. There's like Nova. It's just all serviceable.
Songs. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're all doing work.
Yeah,
like you can just put those on loop the whole movie. I think I could safely say, I mean, Carpenter did a lot of good scores. I think it's his best.
Oh, absolutely.
Hands down of any of the ones.
My favorite is Assault on Precinct 13 just because of how goofy it is.
I also really like
the
Escape from New York soundtrack. Yeah, that's
pretty great. But I would say that Halloween is his best.
Certainly.
I have one more thing about Michael as a character, as an icon. I think it's cool, like you were talking about the breathing before. I do like that he is just silent, that there is no sense of effort in any of his like actions or kill. You know what I mean? You hear him breathe when he's like, you know, being a creeper, but like when it actually comes time to kill, there's no grunting, no yelling, you know, it's just, he's just doing what he does. He's like so calm, which we'll get into later. But when we were watching the zombie movies, it was really annoying to have like Unabomber Michael Myers running around like making grunt noises and stuff, like the kills like it was just very very unappealing.
To follow up with that, there's also not really, at this stage, I could be wrong, but there's not really a motive involved in his
there's right. no anger right. there's
yeah.
no
yeah, it's, yeah it makes it creepier.
It's even more mysterious in this first one.
Why is he targeted Laurie Strode? I mean, in like, there was no answer when this came out. It was just he just went, evil. Yeah, she'll do. No. I'm going to murder the fuck out of her.
Well, that's what's brilliant about the opening scene, is it's all this young boy murders his sister for no reason at all, and then that's what you're left with. And the movie's kind of just an extrapolation of that idea made longer, for sure. I actually, before we move on, I do have one thing I almost forgot to mention, is I have one criticism of the first film, just one.
Get out, John.
And it's the after the closet scene, which, by the way, is amazing, like a classic scene, when Michael Myers gets sort of poked by the coat hanger. They have this moment where he takes his mask off, and you can kind of see his derp-ass face with like a swelling eye, which I always thought was just a really poor choice. It's like, why show his face? I would way prefer it was just the mask the whole time. I don't really know why they did that.
Yeah, I think I agree. I wasn't too keen on seeing what he looked like.
Right, but in the defense, and I totally agree with what you're saying, but in the defense, there hasn't really been established that he's this completely mysterious figure. It's kind of, you know, a blank slate.
Yeah, but I mean, they make this whole point of never showing his face the whole movie, I guess, except when he's a child.
That's right.
And but what's really weird about it, which is why we do things like Cinemarathon, is that you immediately, in the opening of Halloween 2, you have a retelling of the events of the end of the first movie. And in that scene, they completely re-edited the footage to have him remove the mask, but in a way that you can't see his face.
Yeah, or certainly just see less of it.
Or less of it. It's like much more in shadow. And I think it was a much better edit. And I think they knew that, having, you know, when it's time to show that footage again, they're like, yeah, maybe we need to cut that out. That wasn't the best decision.
I mean, you never know if it was some, you know, producer or somebody who was funding the film being like, no, I gotta see his face, man, or whatever. Like, I'm just assuming, but, you know.
I did have one thing. I don't think we actually talked about Laurie that much.
No, we haven't really talked about Jamie Lee Curtis.
Well, there's one other thing about Mike that I really like. I don't know if he's the first to do it. I'm positive he's not the first to do it, but I feel like for me, it's what got it on my radar. I love the Michael Myers is dead in the background and everybody's just talking about something else, and like the quiet, like just sit up and look over thing.
Definitely.
That's like a really good creepy move that like I think is just his.
Yeah.
Like that's a Michael Myers.
Yeah, Jason Wholesale steals it every now and then, but it's a Michael Myers original.
I think that's a real creepy thing because like he's like not in focus in the background, and like, you know, you're like, oh my God, when is he going to get up? And then when he does, you're like, oh shit, turn around. Like just freaking out. Yeah.
Which is why if he's passed out on the ground in front of me, I'm bashing his brains in.
Yeah, there's no
everything I got.
Paul Rudd style motherfucker.
Yeah, there is no way I'd like poke Michael Myers with a wire hanger and then be like, done and done. Like, you know, I'm just like, I just on sheer, like, you know, preservation of life, like, I would just run immediately, you know? But she, like, because Laurie does that a few times. Yeah. She's just like, oh, well, he's dead.
A dozen times. Yeah. Like,
As actually a lead female protagonist in a horror movie, she's, like you said before, I don't think she's that likable. Like, she's kind of I don't know, like, you have sympathy for her because her friends are assholes, but she doesn't bring a lot to the table. And actually, it does have that classic horror movie trope of being irritated by the lead girl in many ways, as far as like being intelligent. She doesn't run out. She runs upstairs. You know, she leaves the killer sitting 2 feet away from her and she turns away. Like, it's a lot of sort of irritating stuff like that for me.
I do like Laurie, and correct me if I'm wrong. Is it this movie or the next movie where they bring in the Mr. Sandman song?
I believe that's the second movie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. So that's more implied.
Which is later. Super effective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I wind up attributing that song to this first movie, but I could be wrong in doing it. But applying it to that and to her other friends pestering her about what boys she's attracted to or not attracted to, and how she's not promiscuous and she doesn't take risks. Fighting him is a risk, mm-hmm. in a way, or taking on as much responsibility as she does and surviving the night. It's a rite of passage into womanhood, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is. And
well, I'm sure you grow up after an experience.
Exactly.
Like you grow up
just a bit.
Exactly. And
unless you're in the Rob Zombie movies, and then you just put up Charlie Manson posters, and become a goth idiot face,
yeah. and get into therapy immediately.
But yeah, I wouldn't say she's unlikable so much as a personality, just so much as in the idea of a horror movie like female trope. That she makes some really piss poor decisions. But I do give her credit for making an effort. You know, some girls would just go into the closet and then just get stabbed. But she, you know, she does try to fight back. That's cool. There was just a few scenarios where, like, as an audience member, you're like that, like you're yelling at the screen. Like, why is this a thing?
Well, I think if she has any faults, I don't think it's that she's necessarily annoying. It's just more like she's not a terribly well-rounded character. Like, there's mm-hmm. not a lot there in terms of her.
You also got to take into account, which I think you do a really good job, is she's a teenager. She's 18. Like, I mean,
yeah,
teenagers are
17.
Sorry. Yeah, even younger.
That's right.
Teenagers are inherently unsure of themselves, and
right.
mm-hmm. and I think that lends itself to the entire scenario of placing Mike Myers into this, you know,
mm-hmm.
let me haunt you at your most vulnerable state
Definitely. Type
situation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it adds to the fright by having her be an insecure 17-year-old.
Mm-hmm. You know? Definitely. I think it's also interesting that with the exception of Loomis and the sheriff that's sort of like naysaying Loomis the whole time, that you actually, the movie really is from the perspective of kids. You know what I mean? Like, there's like, do we ever even see Laurie's parents or
very briefly.
He tells her to drop off a key
at
the Myers house,
but it's in because like it really is like these kids are on their own. There are kids babysitting other kids, so I think that's a really good choice.
It's like you take smoking weed and having sex.
I mean, you can take that scene with the kid seeing Michael Myers out the window and constantly asking about the boogeyman. Like, mm-hmm. that's kind of what the movie is. It's like kids are afraid of the boogeyman, mm-hmm. and Michael Myers is the real boogeyman coming to get you.
Mm-hmm.
That kid, by the way, Tommy Doyle. Remember that name later.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Comes back.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys have anything else about the first film?
It's a classic.
Absolutely. I guess just one question for you guys. Sure. Like, is there a definitive kill for this movie that you... Like, when you think of, like, Michael Myers killing someone, that's the one you think of?
For me, I think the first thing pops in my head is the boyfriend that he staples to the wall.
With a knife or whatever.
By piercing him through with a butcher knife. Yeah. Like, that's pretty memorable.
I agree.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
Actually, I don't have any specific, like, typical Michael kill for me held in this one.
I'm kind of the same with Pat, though. In thinking about it, the first thing that pops into my head is the first scene.
Sure. You know,
but it's not really him in...
No, that counts.
Full grown, but I mean, it's pretty brutal considering.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And certainly putting you in his mind, or at least through
the POV and whatnot.
Yeah, that's great. Speaking of kills, I believe, Pat, you were keeping a tally, right?
For these movies? Yes, I do. I do have a tally here.
What we got for the first movie?
For the first movie, as Manny pointed out, the least kills in the whole entire series, 4 individuals felled by Michael himself. And 2 dogs.
Oh, man. I know my wife took that particularly hard. Anytime Michael Myers killed a dog, she just got real sad.
Keep in mind, he eats dogs.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, Loomis, they're at the Myers house with the Loomis and the cop.
Yeah.
And there's a dead dog there, right. And Loomis is like, he got hungry.
Yes.
That's got to be a new food for him, right? I doubt they served him dogs at the mental institution.
Budget cuts, man. Budget cuts.
So he can break into a shop and steal a mask, but food is just dog in the street.
He can't get in those tin cans, man. he's all fumble.
He never knew how.
Yeah, never figured it out.
I'd like to mention something about the mask. It was news to me. I don't know if this is common knowledge, but that it was a Captain Kirk mask.
Yeah,
that's just spray painted. And yet it looks, in the entire series, far and away to me the best mask. I mean, I know it's the most iconic, it's the first one.
Definitely.
It just, I think the cheapness and the of it just adds to the, you know.
Mystique.
The mystique, yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought that was super cool.
Yeah.
Actually, that mask is thought to have been pulled off of a face mask that they made, or a mold of Shatner on a sci-fi movie that he had done recently. Oh, where if you look at it, he's got like some weird kind of extra cheekage going on and some... It's a weird... the name of it escapes me at the moment, but...
So it's not Captain Kirk, it's Shatner?
It's Shatner. It is Shatner. But like they sold it as a Captain Kirk mask, but they made it off of a mold that they took of his face
and
an altar
Star Trek.
That was from a sci-fi movie that he was in.
Gotcha.
So just, you know, a little extra bit of trivia for you.
Crazy.
Nerd.
What?
I'm insulted.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, let's move on in the series to the next film, which was simply Halloween 2.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
Bum, 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 bum.
Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
Bum, 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 bum.
Which, not directed by John Carpenter, but produced by him and written by him, and pretty much most of the same cast is back. And I actually think this one's pretty solid. Like, by no means a classic or anything, but for killing in a hospital, like, it gets the job done, I think.
I think it's solid as well.
That's okay. It doesn't... It's one of those scenarios for me where I... You know, if I'm going to sit down and watch a movie and I have the choice, I'll always pick the first movie.
Oh, definitely.
There's literally no... There's nothing in two that would make me ever choose to watch it over the first movie. Ever. Like, I just don't... It's sort of like a... I wouldn't call it a waste of time because it is actually fairly well executed. I just don't care. You know, it doesn't offer anything to the series that's interesting to me.
Not even that sweet pumpkin at the top. It's pretty good.
Pumpkin's pretty cool.
The pumpkin with the skull in it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is the one that does the Laurie Strode as a sister thing. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you going to say
Josh, I was simply going to give you credit because you carved that pumpkin this year. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess, listener, if you're not at least familiar with it or haven't seen it in a while, because I didn't even remember this until we watched it, but the opening credits where it says Halloween 2, it's like a pumpkin that opens up and then inside it is like this nasty skull. And it was like a really cool kind of visual thing to
Very
do
cool.
at the top of the movie.
Yeah, great intro, but sort of mediocre rest of the movie.
Matthew, going back to what you said, I fully agree. I would never watch the second one with on top of the first one for no reason, but I really like how the story continues, though we were just talking how the mystery just of the ending of the first one mm-hmm. just adds to how good it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I like that the story continues. And
yeah.
Yeah, it picks up just moments after the first movie.
Literally moments.
I'm actually slightly surprised that you, John, are not totally offended by it. To like to take something like a movie that you really love and a character that's iconic and means something to you, and that it would, like Pat was saying, it's like it really works on its own. Halloween 1, it's almost perfect.
Sure.
And then for this movie to come around and then just set up this real bullshit scenario,
well,
is sort of upsetting to me.
I can see you having that opinion, having seen Halloween 1 probably many a time and mm-hmm. never seen the second movie until we did this marathon.
Yeah.
The only way I can really explain it, because I wouldn't say I'm like super offended, but when I saw Halloween 2, it was like the day after I saw Halloween 1. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was sort of all kind of in the same experience.
Yeah.
Like, and I was very much a young kid who just couldn't wait to see Michael Myers murdering people, mm-hmm. and that was fun for me. And I thought the whole hospital killing thing was really good.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, there was nothing about it that offended me. I don't think it takes away anything from the first movie. If anything, it's just sort of a continuation.
Well, I mean, it only takes away the mystery, which is a huge aspect.
Like, I mean, not much. I mean,
it gives them an MO.
They throw in that Laurie is his sister, which I guess is some of a mystery of why he was attacking her, but they don't take away, you know, why he's killing people, why
well,
he's...
Well, the only reason introduced is just to justify why she's in the second movie and he's going after her.
Right. I don't know. I just think it's sort of weird to me that Halloween 2 sets a motivation to a character that we said one of the most important and interesting things about the first movie being a classic is that there was no motivation, that it was just empty. I just have this feeling that, like, if Halloween had been this thing you didn't grow up with as a kid and you loved it as much as you do, and then like this year Halloween 2 came out and all of a sudden they added motivation that she was this, like, you would be like up in arms about it.
Oh yeah, I agree. But it's a scenario where it just happened the way it is, like, mm-hmm. the way I explain it is I have a memory of, like, I watched the Star Wars movies, but I've never not known that Darth Vader's Luke's father. Mm-hmm. Like, I have no memory of an experience of not knowing that. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the same with Halloween. Like, even when I watched the first Halloween, my memory is just like, yeah, she's his sister.
Yeah.
Like, that's always been just a fact in my mind. So it's not, yeah. it doesn't feel like some violation or betrayal. That's just, yeah. to me, is like fact.
Certainly, as far as your personal experience, I totally get that. I'm just saying, like, if we're talking about it philosophically.
Sure. I know, like, I totally yeah. see where you're coming
from. Yeah, inherently, like, 2 kind of upsets me. Although it does give us the rest of the, like, franchise, which is fun.
But it's not like they're doing that sequel 10 years later. I think it happens a year later.
Yeah, no, it's super close.
It feels to me...
Halloween 2?
Yeah.
Halloween 2 literally happens like 5 minutes later.
No, I'm saying when it was released.
Saying when it
released.
Was released. I think it was a few years after
the
first
Yeah, a couple
years.
Yeah.
So I just have the feeling that it was always the intent to have that movie made.
You know, Manny, I can actually refute that in a weird way. And it actually ties it ties into Halloween 3 in a way, which we can get into this more later. But the Halloween was conceived as a series, but not a Michael Myers series. It was conceived as sort of like a
horror moments.
Yeah, like an anthology. Each movie is going to be its own thing. And they had other movies written, one of which is the movie that ends up being Halloween 3. But the first movie was such a hit that they then decided to make a sequel.
So they turned the script in and made it in under a year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they just cranked it. They still do that today.
I stand corrected then.
Take your saws and your paranormal activities, and those are annual, you know, so it definitely is possible.
I really wish that they would have stuck to their guns and actually done that.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that would. Yeah, really, I wish they just had a series. Like, if you know what? Optimally, what would be great if there was a Halloween series. First movie's Michael Myers, but then they just made like a Michael Myers series or something like that after that. If that was successful, but then kept on doing like the Halloween movies as well.
As an anthology.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I think that they would have called it, if they knew it was going to be about Michael Myers and like that was, if they knew that was going to be like what the series were making, I theorize they would have called it The Night He Came Home, since like that was their big thing.
Mm-hmm. That was the tagline, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we should mention Laurie's, not boyfriend, but sort of male interest that pops up in this movie.
The Last Starfighter?
Yes, it was played by the guy from The Last Starfighter.
The oldest of the Jaws sons.
That's right.
He's like this not so busy EMT that basically on a night where people are getting
busiest night.
Yeah, like everyone's getting murdered, but he somehow is just hanging out with Laurie the whole time. Doesn't make any sense, but oh well. But I thought that was kind of an interesting wrinkle to give her like a love interest, especially since it's a story in the first movie and
that she likes
guys.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Although, you know, we know what happened to her true love.
Yeah.
Does anyone remember?
Yeah, I remember. I was about to say, please feel free. It's the best part of the movie.
Yes, Ben Tramer winds up being a victim of the mania caused by Michael himself.
Oh, yes.
Because
this is amazing.
Do you not remember this man?
I'm blanking, dude.
For whatever reason, he happens to be dressed exactly like Michael Myers.
Oh, he has the misfortune of buying the same mask,
Walking down the street.
Another jumpsuit.
Yes, that's right.
And somebody plows into him in a car.
Yes, that's right. It's so weird. The setup is strange because like Loomis and the sheriff see him and go, wait, hold on. Is that him? And they're like, hey, you, come here. And he's like, no. And just was walking away awkwardly instead of being
here comes the cop car.
And like he's crossing the street and out of nowhere, this cop car just goes and like hits him, nails him into
an ambulance.
Yeah. And explodes. It's great. Yeah.
Which it sort of makes sense as you continue.
You
want to
rethink that thought about part 2 now, Matt?
Yeah, right. All worth it.
It it starts to become clear, especially to me when I was watching it, as the movie continues, that it was all essentially a device to have the cops think Michael Myers is dead. So that you can sort of have him stalk this hospital without anyone wandering on guard or like looking after Laurie or anything. Right. And I think that's mainly the reason it happens. Although it's funny that this poor bastard has this mask on. It does not, I don't know, put its hands up or go, "Hey, cops, I'm a guy." Like,
yeah, take it off immediately.
He just walks like a murderer down the street.
It's so strange that they would put that in there. I mean, like, why? I mean, especially like just the cop plowing into him. Like,
it's so against protocol. There's so much paperwork after that.
He literally says the kid popped up out of nowhere. It's like, no, he was just crossing the street.
He's coming right for us. Yeah, you could just shoot him. Like, why run him over?
I think that got a rounding applause as we were watching.
Oh, yeah,
it was wild and sad and frightening.
It was weird.
It definitely felt out of place because it's super like stunt pyro explosion.
Yeah.
Which you watch the first movie, it's like nowhere in that zone at all.
And not to say it wasn't brutal, but it amounts to a fender bender. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he was going.
The guy
90.
Would have been maybe paraplegic, or he would have broken his legs. He was not dying.
Yeah,
it was, let alone exploding.
Yeah. It's like one of those classic sketches where it's like, ding.
Like a top secret.
Yeah, top secret. That's exactly what I was thinking of, yeah.
While we're on that subject, I want to dovetail then into what I believe to be the significance of Mr. Sandman.
Yes, the song from the beginning.
Exactly, because Ben Tramer's untimely death means that the one person that Laurie admitted that she actually was attracted to is now dead. And burned and gone. So the man of her dreams is replaced by the man of her nightmares.
Interesting.
Do you get it?
Oh my god.
Yeah. Well, I do like I love the addition of the Mr. Sandman song because it is sort of tying into Michael Myers. It's great. It has that sweet, pleasant, you know, 50s vibe that is sort of darkened and tainted by the horror of the movie. And it's, it goes into dreams and stuff. Michael Myers is very much like from a dream, the boogeyman, a nightmare. Like, that was a cool pick.
Other than the first one, I don't really find any of them even that remotely scary. And, I mean, it's just, there's no horror.
Yeah, there's no moments of scary.
You didn't shit your pants where that guy was having sex with the woman in the hot tub and Michael Myers turned up the heat and killed him. Yeah.
You know,
that was
so
awesome,
scary.
But I wouldn't say it was horrific. Yeah.
That is the kill that I think of the most when it comes to this movie in terms of Michael Myers doing it. Because obviously if I'm thinking of a person dying in this movie, I'm thinking of the guy blowing up after getting hit by a car. But what's actually kind of interesting is I remember that death always stood out to me, or that kill, and I thought it was interesting that he like boils her head in this water, and I was like, how unique. And then it just so happens that we watched two nights ago Profondo Rosso, which the killer in that does the exact same thing. It's interesting. It's kind of cool.
Basically, if you watch slasher movies, everything's been done and you're probably redoing it. Like, who knows if they even ripped that off? Like, they may have just independently thought of the same thing. It's like totally something that
I love that it was like, I guess it was supposed to be a physical therapy tub.
Yes, like for old people.
But it
like
has the loose of the joints. Setting.
Yeah, yeah. I always love that movie. It's like you put the setting on the machine that's like imminent danger.
It's also funny because it's heating a tank of water. Like, it's not like you can, like, that big giant ass tub of water. You're like, just crank it up and like 10 seconds later, it's like, I'm ready to boil people. Like, it's going to be like, come back in an hour.
That's a really good point. Like, if that were the case, you could just cook pasta in 5 seconds. Yeah. Oh, it's ready to go.
This thing will flash fry a buffalo.
But yeah, you're right, Matthew.
Revolutionize the restaurant industry.
You're totally right, Matthew. Like, why is it set to this murder kill? Like, it's like, hey, this will loosen you up, Grandma. Like, that's ridiculous.
So strange. But it is a sort of an interesting kill for Michael Myers because it's so engineered.
Well,
you know what I mean? It's like so structured.
It certainly stands out for Michael Myers because I think without exception, and I'm sure there's like maybe one or two, but every other kill that Michael Myers ever has is, I stab you.
Yeah.
Or there might be one that he crushes the guy's
doesn't
head.
Doesn't he choke the girl in the car in the first movie?
I can't remember if he chokes her or cuts her throat.
He does. Yeah, he does not stab her.
He does not.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, Michael Myers,
he stabs many of people.
He likes stabbing. He does not like to vary from that very much. It's either throat slitting or puncturing your body with something, and like that is
it. Or exploding your head with electricity.
Which is like actually kind of weird. Oh, yes, that's the best one. But
we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get to it. That's the best kill from Michael Myers, absolutely. But. And that was one thing about the series that I found was actually really disappointing. And like even today I was watching some because we had to cut out of this a little early. And other slasher genre series have like different deaths or like different cool ways of doing things, but like they never really mix it up with Michael Myers a lot.
Yeah, they really stay the course.
Like, I don't know. Just as a side, you were talking about how there's never really anything new, but like I was thinking about You're Next. And
sure,
one of the best parts of that movie is when, spoiler alert, like the one of the bad guys gets a blender like slammed on their head and then plugged in and turned on. Right. And I was just like, shit, I'm pretty sure that has never been done. And I really enjoyed watching that insanity. So certainly. Yeah, it's just a missed opportunity, I think, with the series where they just never really switched it up.
Right. Well, that's the tough thing about Halloween is it's like Jason sort of turned into more about how crazy can you kill somebody? And Halloween was always more like, oh, Michael Myers is really scary. But as you start to make sequels, I think that, you know, they just didn't quite know where to go with him. Because, yeah, that would have been a fun way to go. It's just real goofy, like, watch Michael Myers kill people in crazy, you know, mousetrap ways. Yeah. But they just never really went that way.
One thing, I mean, really until Resurrection that surprised me is there wasn't a lot of tongue-in-cheek or a lot of campiness in a lot of them. I think it took itself more serious than it should have.
Well, it wasn't until poor Loomis disappeared that, you know, sort of humor sort of came into the franchise.
Right.
Because it really is like this strange, like, tete-a-tete of yes. Myers and Loomis and like what, you know, the guilt he covers, you know, that he deals with on a day-to-day. So it's like once Loomis exited the picture, that's when the franchise sort of picked up. Which is weird because I have an affinity for Loomis. I think he's pretty awesome.
No, he's
so
great.
But his plot line inherently does sort of keep the film grounded in a way that's not interesting for a 6-movie deal.
I love Loomis, but I get sad watching him in 4-6, which we'll get to later.
Yeah.
We'll get to it, but it makes me sad because it's just cash at that point for him. Like, mm-hmm.
We'll
get into that.
Well, yeah, it definitely prevents things from getting fresh, mm-hmm. for sure. Because it's sort of, he's just regurgitating, like year 5 of like, I'm telling
he's
you guys,
evil. He's evil.
He's the darkness, and you better watch it. It's like, okay, like, we get it.
I guess if you split him up between years and, you know, lose a little bit of effect, but when you're watching him back,
right, I guess that's true.
It's like Loomis is on his tirade again, everybody.
Before we move away from the second movie, we do have to talk about the ending.
Yes, absolutely.
Where Michael Myers gets definitively
killed
the fuck up
with Loomis.
Yeah, just burnt to a crisp like Kentucky Fried Chicken.
After getting both of his eyes shot out.
Yes.
Right. Remind me, how does he get burnt?
So Loomis like hits a can of gas. Well,
They're in like a hospital in a room with gas outlets.
Yeah,
with gas tanks, and Loomis has shot both of his eyes out.
Right,
and so he's blind. He's blind and stumbling around, and he's just about to cross the other side.
He's like
of
blind
the room.
Knife firing, you know, just slashing at the darkness.
He's stabbing in the air, and to distract him. To make Michael think that someone's on the other side of the room, which they are, Loomis turns on the gas on a tank
in the ether tank
and keeps it running. Yes, and so he and Laurie are ping ponging Michael back and forth throughout the room. Eventually, just fills up,
mm-hmm.
and Loomis stays in to keep him busy, and Laurie makes an exit.
Yeah,
So
he basically is just like, go to the darkness, Michael. Lights up a lighter. The whole room explodes. The last shot is Michael Myers' burning face. Yet in the canon,
it is kind of cool that he walks out. He's completely stuntman on fire.
Just like the Terminator?
Yeah, right. He's still alive, walking, and then falls over dead.
And is definitively,
definitely
burning.
Dead. But in the canon of later series, no fatalities.
He's got a little bit of a scar. Yeah,
Loomis is alive. Like Michael Myers is alive. It makes no sense.
Yeah. They got some paper cuts out.
I love also that Loomis takes it upon himself to just be this vigilante.
Yeah. Just light him up.
And like, you know, he's been hanging out with cops all day. And he's like, I'm just taking matters into my own hands here.
Well, I think it goes back to that, you know, personal responsibility. Like he feels like this is his fault. So he's willing to sort of jump on the grenade and take Mike out.
Yeah, and it kind of makes sense up to part 2 where he, you know, he just kills himself and everybody else, but as we'll see, There's more.
Well, yeah, here we are. End of movie two. Michael Myers is dead, so the marathon's over, right? And
yeah,
and there's still, no right, way
guys.
There's.
This all right, is see you later, guys.
I call the end of Michael Myers phase one of four. Yeah,
yes,
four yeah. phases four of phases. Michael Myers.
Oh wait, I just looked at my notes. There's eight more movies. So. Guess Loomis didn't do too good a job. Is Mike still around?
But first, we need to sidetrack a little bit into three, right?
A little palate cleanser. What?
Three more days till Halloween.
Pat, for part two here, like how many? What were our kills at? What were our murders?
An all-time series high thus far. The first double digits brings us 12 people killed by Michael and one casualty killed by the police and general media.
Oh, wow. So that's like three times more than the first movie.
Yes.
Like he, you know, that kind of answers why. I think that's part of the reason I really like two. It's not really a good scary horror movie, but
there's
it's a really
tension,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good like slasher murder movie, which is what I think I like a lot about it. It sort of fills that itch for me. So that'll bring us to the third film, which is Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yeah, fresh air. Yeah.
Love it.
It's almost time, kids. The clock is ticking. Be in front of your TV sets for the horrorthon. And remember the big giveaway at 9. Don't miss it. And don't forget to wear your masks. The clock is ticking. It's almost time.
Happy after Halloween.
So I'm curious, who had actually seen this movie going into it? I had seen it. Am I the only one?
Yeah,
that was
as I previously mentioned, I had no idea that Michael Myers was not in until about 30 minutes
like
in.
40, yeah.
Being
yeah,
like, where is he going to show up?
That was great. Like mid-movie, yeah, Manny, you turned to me and you're like, where's Michael Myers?
Like, it was. I mean, I was just expecting a setup and just wasn't happening. And what's going on?
Which is the same question I imagine audiences had when this film was released. Because
though he does have
strange.
A little sequence in it. I think they're at a bar or something.
Right.
And
that's
and
right. Well, there's a couple times that the Halloween movie is in the movie, well, like on TV.
There's a big part of the plot that involves a big show at 9 o'clock that you're supposed to watch, and so everybody like around that they show in the film is watching the what's on before that, and it's Halloween. Mm-hmm. Halloween is playing up until 9, and then they do their big thing, which we'll get into.
Yeah, the big silver shamrock mask special prize giveaway.
Can I just say what I think is beautiful about this? I mean,
sure,
I'm just gonna nutshell this movie.
Let's all right, break it down.
Fuck
this,
motel.
This movie,
yeah, love nest.
Well, that's not the plot. That's like that's the people. You know,
that's all I cared about.
Yes, but I just love that this movie is about a robot controlling witch man who is selling a bunch of masks to kill children via television signals powered by Stonehenge.
Yes.
That he's apparently had in the works for like 40 years
it's
as
insane.
He preps up.
It is.
Because he built the world's largest mask corporation, which apparently only produces three masks.
But like a bunch of different kinds of robots. Yeah. They've got like 8 million types of robots.
Matthew, but I'm sorry. Did they have a pumpkin mask?
Yes.
Did they have a skull mask?
As I recall.
Did they have a witch mask?
Oh my God, they did.
Oh, well, that's face all you need.
Yeah.
What
that,
else do
there
you
is
need?
No need
They're
for any other mask.
World's largest mask corporation.
Kids don't want to be like something different. They want to be the one of three things max. Don't bother me with anything else.
Did they have a huge flare button on the back that said Silver Shamrock, which shot lasers in the brain and turned them into bugs?
Well, you know what? I have to say yes to all of those questions.
So, irrefutable.
Halloween conquered. That's all you need. Yeah, no, you're right. The plot is just batshit insane. Like, it's just... And the part of the movie that's kind of interesting is when you don't know what's going on. Because there's some kind of cool mystery.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know the
like
guys
you're
are...
waiting for Michael Myers to show up.
That, yes. It is mysterious. But no, it's like you don't know that the robot guys are robots. And so there are these weird psycho killers that are just kind of exploding. And you don't know what's going on. And... that part's interesting, and you know there's some conspiracy with the mask, but you don't know what. But I think when it all sort of comes together, you're just kind of left wondering what the hell it's even about. It's just so silly. Like, they have one little throw at the beginning of the movie, like a news thing on, like, oh, a piece of Stonehenge is missing. That's hot.
Right?
And you're like, what? What is that? And then, of course, later when it's they go to, like, Dr. No's lair, it's their Stonehenge.
Yeah, you kind of wonder, like, is this a Carmen Sandiego thing? Like, who steals a monument or something that size?
But I feel like we should talk about our lead.
Tom Atkins.
Clearly, John Carpenter's like favorite dude, because he more than once does what he does in this movie. It's pretty great.
Yeah, his favorite senior citizen that he decides to cast in leading man roles.
Yeah, because he was in John Carpenter's The Fog as like the protagonist who beds down a woman half his age.
Jamie Lee Curtis, actually.
Yeah. And then in this movie, he comes in and uses his sweet... like
stash.
Old man face.
His doctor charms.
Yeah, his doctor charms. And oh yeah, doctor detective.
Right, because that was great, because he's a doctor. And then I forgot how he gets mixed up in this madness.
Her father had been a patient at the hospital.
And he's the guy that you see in the beginning who's being chased by the robots with a pumpkin going like, you'll never get away with it. Like, so he's murdered.
He decides to go on sabbatical. Cancel all his appointments with his patients and just go detectiving.
Except for
with
this
lady.
He doesn't do detectiving. He actually just does a lot of fucking.
Right.
And he has assistant back at the office do all the detectives for him via phone.
Yes, he has his laboratory nurse.
Yeah. And he regularly checks in too.
Like a secretary in the detective's office.
Yeah, like he's Sam Spade, just like, got anything for me, baby? Like,
find out about Silver Shamrock for me, will you?
Yeah, I want to see the movie that's like about her. She's like this poor lab tech who comes in like just to do a 9-to-5, and all of a sudden she's like looking up FBI files and shit. Like, what is that about? It's so weird.
But it's crazy. We talk about him in the motel with the lady. That came out of absolute goddamn nowhere. Because it's not like some sexy buildup. It's like he's investigating with this young woman who's the daughter of the guy. There's this guy that dies at the beginning and is running from the robot man.
His skull is pulled apart through his eyes. Yeah.
Which is pretty cool, actually.
Yeah.
And so he's shacked up with this lady, and it's just they've come to this town to investigate, and that's it.
Yeah, and they check into the hotel, and they're trying to figure out sleeping arrangements.
Yeah, and then someone points out, like, oh, there's only one bed, and I think he's like, well, where's the problem? And then it just, like, next thing you know, they're like,
No.
She says, also, you can have. He says, "You can have the bed. I'll sleep on the floor." And she goes, "That's not necessary." And then, like, it just goes like straight the fuck out.
But we all are watching. No one expected it to go there. And then all of a sudden, they're making love, and everyone's like, "What the fuck?" Like, it's just out of nowhere.
And she is 30 years his age.
She's 14 years old. Yeah. Or at least looks it. Like,
yeah, she's like, very young. We looked it up, and she, in reality, was about 26 years younger than him. But what makes it so out of nowhere is that, okay, you've both agreed to get in a car together to drive to some small town, presumably like more than 100 miles away, to investigate your missing father.
And they don't know each other.
And they don't know each other. They have no idea. And your plan is to go to a motel. Makes sense. You're out of town. But when you rent the room, isn't it always the question of how many beds do you want?
Yes.
So when he pulled a switcheroo, let's go there. Let's just admit that he probably swindled that scenario.
Like, it does specifically say like they're undercover and they're posing as a married couple.
They're pretending to be husband and wife.
Because
the town is based around the factory, and the factory is very mysterious and weird. So they're trying to be under the radar.
Gotcha. So we're tourists in a town that no one wants to go to. Undercover. But he's like, okay, well, I'll sleep in the car, I believe is exactly what he says. And then, like you said, the complete 180 that comes out of, well, no, now we're fucking for no reason. It's just very strange. But the best part of the movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was pretty amusing.
Strange as it is, I felt so great for Tom Atkins' character, because what we saw earlier, that his shrew of an ex-wife,
who is the curly haired girl from the police
Annie.
Chief's daughter
from the previous two movies.
From the previous movies,
from the first one,
exactly. So he suffers when he's around her, and so the this is some sort of sweet relief of a vacation that turns into a terrible, horrible, madcap plot.
Yeah, it's really insane. But she's actually also in The Fog as well. Jamie Lee Curtis, Tom Atkins, and that woman are all main characters in that movie.
That's true.
And Jamie Lee Curtis does make a brief cameo in the film as like a voice on the phone. At one point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember that, which was
it's like a, your call cannot be completed as dialed or something. And you're just like, is that Jamie Lee Curtis? And then it's over.
Yeah, I just love to back to the fuck motel real quick. Is that she's literally looking for her father?
Yes,
like this is not like we're on vacation
probably
scenario.
Dead father.
My probably dead father, and all she can think about is how she wants to have this 50-year-old dude, you know, like all sweating on her. It's very strange. It's like you don't really love your dad. You don't care.
Yeah. But they, I mean, that's kind of the movie. Like they basically just investigate this stuff, find the. It turns out this broadcast, this special giveaway, is in fact a secret signal that's gonna enact all the masks to fire lasers into the kids' heads and turn every child that's wearing this mask in the world and just dead, basically into like bugs.
It turns their heads into bugs and snakes.
And yeah. Snakes, and those snakes will in turn attack people who are around those dead children.
Yes. And why is Mr. Warlock doing this, the owner of this toy company? Because he's a dick. Like, he's gone crazy. He's a warlock from olden days, and they've stolen Stonehenge. But what I don't understand, rather than like sacrificing every year or whatever, he has just hidden his witch self and is dedicated his whole life to this one prank? It's just so strange.
I think it's that nobody's been doing the crazy, like, Wiccan-type sacrifice stuff that's going every year. And so he's like, I'm just going to, like, save them all up.
Well, maybe if he'd actually done them rather than, like, plant this super plot.
No. It's robots.
It's about quality, not quantity.
Yeah, I suppose.
But I guess what I don't understand about the scenario of him and the woman coming to this town and staying in the hotel is, what's the next stage of the plan? Because they spend a lot of time fucking and not a lot of time investigating.
They do tour the place.
Yeah, they end up getting a tour.
That was the big to-do.
In their defense, they're not really qualified to be investigators.
Tell me Dr. Detective isn't licensed. He's not on. Like, he hasn't gone through training.
This was a precursor to Diagnosis Murder, so okay. You have to give him a break.
Gotcha. And there's cameras everywhere. Like, it's hard for him to do anything.
Yeah, all over the town.
I don't know, man. I think they could have been focused on their actual job a little bit.
Well, aren't all like the hoodlums or something all robots?
Yes. All of the staff, most of the town, are just robots that this guy's made to just do his bidding. But all they do are make
like
masks
from Alien.
Yeah. Well, they're like his men in black. It's like if anything goes off plan, he just sends them to kill people.
Right.
And that's it.
But there's quite a few of them.
There's hundreds.
It's like an army of them.
Yeah.
It'd be easier just to send robots to kill people and sacrifice than
robots. It's really weird because up until a certain moment in the movie, the robots are invincible, and then our mustachioed senior citizen hero just takes one apart.
Yeah.
No problem. Later.
Yeah.
Like he just like. It comes up against him and he just goes, yeah, blah, 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 and just destroys it.
Yeah.
I think
throughout the whole time, also the lab tech is like scratching her head. Why am I studying oil
and gears?
I found no organic parts. There's only machinery parts here. I can't understand it.
There's a part where I forget what it did, but there's like in the hospital, the guy goes to the hospital, right? And then one of the robots shows up and kills him.
Yeah, kills the guy in the hospital.
And just. Lights himself
explodes.
On fire.
Yes. Yeah. That was the woman's father that he came to kill, basically.
So he's got her analyzing the car parts, and she's like, I don't get it. It's just a bunch of car parts. And then like at one point, she's like, wait a second. There's like servos in here.
It's like Petri dishes filled with like little like washers and shit and nuts and bolts. And you're like, okay, did you really put that under a microscope? I can pretty much tell you right off the bat that's not organic material.
Yeah, she might as well pick up like the Terminator skull and just be like, I'm stumped. Is this a hood ornament? I don't know. It's just silly. It's just crazy. We should talk about our hero and his grand finale in the film because he has James Bond stopped the whole thing, killed all the robots and stuff, but the broadcast is still going out. Mm-hmm. So he drives like a madman into the same gas station from the beginning of the movie. And he's on the phone, gives him his Dr. Detective credentials to the broadcast
every
companies.
Every major broadcaster.
I guess he's on the phone with the federal government or something.
He's calling one company, one broadcaster at a time.
Each one at a time, yes.
Because there's only like, I believe there's three.
Cell phones.
Well, there's three channels in that area. that he can prevent. So it's like it's a really lose-lose scenario. It's like you can only call so many stations in, you know, 3 minutes, because apparently the broadcast is going out worldwide.
Yes.
So like it's a really futile attempt at saving people. But I mean, you know, it's sort of like, well, that's a bad comparison. I was gonna say Schindler, but it was like it was like if I could just save one more, you know, like, but he knows he's losing.
But what's crazy about it is he gets like 2 out of 3 to shut it down.
Yeah.
Which, imagine it's the Super Bowl and like people have paid you billions of dollars to broadcast commercials. And then I, some guy at a gas station, like, turn him off, man.
Turn off the Super Bowl.
Don't really play that Dos Equis commercial. It's gonna kill everybody. Oh my god. Like, no one would listen.
No way.
Like, are you kidding? But somehow, like, to NBC and ABC or whoever, like, shut it down.
Yeah.
CBS, though, stays on the air.
And the movie just literally ends with he's watching and he's like, turn it off! And, like, freeze frames, and that's it. Like, you don't even see what happened.
Because there's kids wearing those masks in the gas station with him at that moment. So
Kids are wearing them, too, back at home.
At
like,
home.
You see his kids have the mask.
Right, because
his
kids are wearing them. To his wife. He's like, please take them off.
Who plays a bitchy character in this movie again.
Yes.
Apparently it's what she's good at.
That's true.
But like, because
it's the same woman from the
from
first
one and two.
Movie.
Yeah. And so she's just basically just not listening to him at all. The only person in the world who doesn't believe in his credentials as Dr. Detective. But like, he like calls her, and every time he tries to hold a conversation, she just is like, no go. She just doesn't listen to him. Which is really
it's
funny dynamic.
Am I right? We all got them.
Can't live with them.
But it seems just downright unfair to me to hype up the murder of every child in the country.
And then to freeze
and then
frame.
Just cut out. Like, we don't even see
not
if
even
it
the country, the
right.
world. Yeah. Like,
that's silly.
This makes it feel a lot like some of John Carpenter's other more drastic movies, like, say, Prince of Darkness.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Or even They Live.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah.
Where we're led to believe, by the end of it, In the Mouth of Madness, that the entire world is gone.
Yeah,
right?
It's just, the world's turned into something new, something we can't understand.
And especially even with The Thing, the whole world is threatened.
So basically what you're saying is we should add this to the Apocalypse quadrilogy.
Sure. I'd say it's a step cousin because he's not credited with directing, but it's certainly related. It's a neighbor.
Yeah.
Well, he helped write it. And
yes. Ooh,
Carpenter
produced
it.
Is that what it was?
He produced it.
He helped write it, Carpenter?
Yeah, Carpenter co-wrote it, and he also produced it. But I think
he did the soundtrack, too, I think.
Yes, he did some of the soundtrack.
Yeah.
But this is all still just a holdover from that idea of this being a franchise. I mean, they had this movie written, and then that's why they went ahead and made it. They're like, well, we killed Michael Myers. Let's go back to that franchise.
There's no way we can go back.
And then apparently all the audiences were like, fuck this shit. And, you know, luckily their prayers were answered.
Well, it must have flopped. I'm sure we could look it up, I'm sure.
I would imagine so. I mean, it has a kind of a weird cult following. Like, I've seen some various, you know, horror websites and people I know are kind of weird fans of it.
Actually, I retract it. That movie was definitely campy.
I actually enjoyed it a lot.
So I enjoyed it too.
Second best movie of what we watched, I think. Of that, in terms of like second best Michael Myers movie, yes, Halloween Resurrection. But like, I think second best movie just because it was something new and different and crazy.
This is a point of contention, but personally, I like Halloween 2 more than Halloween 3.
Okay, I can see that.
But that holds a lot for me personally of just when I saw it.
To be fair, I kind of mold those two into one movie. Like,
sure.
Sure. The first time I watched it, it was Monster Vision, and it was a double feature with both of them. But anyway.
But yeah, I think as a standalone, just kind of weird horror movie, it certainly has its place in checking out. But as like as part of the Michael Myers tale, like, it just doesn't belong at all.
So we kind of glossed over something.
What did we gloss over?
Before he goes and has this big storming the factory, like, hero's journey thing, the girl that he's sticking it to she's abducted. She's taken away.
Right.
And,
Right.
And so then he goes and he finds her and she's just tied up and like totally sitting there and it's weird. So then, once he get out and he's like, he throws a wrench in the works and everything starts, he doctor knows the place basically.
Yeah.
He runs out and they're driving in the car and then she activates and surprise, she's a robot now.
Yeah.
Right.
And there's this really funny sequence where like she's like struggling with him and he drives into a car and she seems passed out and her arm is falling off. But then like he gets out of the car, but then the arm tries to kill him or something. There's like three times where there's like different parts of her that like he's like, finally, I got this robot chick out of my hair.
Well, we didn't supposed else to assume comes. That she was a robot the whole time.
Or? She's not a robot.
I don't.
There was a moment. There was a scene where she basically goes missing, where she's like, oh, where's the girl? And then when she comes back, the switch had been made. Yeah.
She kind of gets like body snatched. Yeah, sort of.
Right.
It's kind of that. Like now it's a fake her, but it seems like the real her. Although that would be hysterical if it was meant that she was a robot beginning. All along. Yeah. Like he had
sadly,
a robot.
We
daughter.
Knew all along.
Battlestar.
The whole time.
Absolutely.
But the joy of monogamy.
But this movie apparently only cost $2.5 million, which is actually pretty impressive.
Very well spent.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But it made $14.5 million.
That's so. Pretty.
There you go.
Yeah, interesting.
So they weren't too upset about Michael being gone.
It's beating Machete Kills.
Oh, well, yeah.
back sure. in the 80s. So there you go.
There's another scene that we glossed over that I actually really like.
Sure.
There's a woman that lives in the hotel next. She's staying in the hotel room next door to them, and she has one of those masks, and she's complaining that like the little silver shamrock thing in the back came off. So she decides to like take a needle and go sit in her bed and just start poking it and stuff, and it malfunctions and like zaps her fucking mouth off.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And it's a pretty awesome kill. Like, cause the effects are amazing. Like, she almost kind of looks like one of the They Live creatures after it's done with her.
Yeah.
And then like Jerusalem crickets start coming out of her face and stuff.
Yeah. No, it's pretty gnarly.
Special effects wise, that's a pretty solid movie. It's, you know, like I said, it's not really appropriate to the franchise, but as a standalone movie, it's fun. Worthwhile.
Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder. We were talking about it a little bit earlier, but had Halloween been just a series that had nothing to do with each other, if every movie was just kind of a new thing, that would have been a really interesting franchise.
Oh, it would have been awesome.
Probably preferable to what we have.
Yeah, absolutely.
If this was any indication, it would be incredible.
Yeah. Well, did you guys have anything else for Halloween 3?
Turn it off!
Turn it off!
Turn it off!
Yeah, needs a better ending. Let's just throw that out there.
I like it just the way it is. It'd be like if you were watching Poltergeist, and then when Craig T. Nelson starts screaming, "You moved the headstones, but you didn't move the box," and just like credits started rolling.
Freeze frame.
Yeah, freeze frame.
Yeah,
and you're just like, "What? What is that about?"
That's silly. So, Pat, I'm curious for Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. I know Michael Myers isn't doing any killing, but, you know, where are we at on murders and stuff?
This one is completely outrageous because we can't specifically pinpoint, as a result of the events, who dies. However, there are about... where'd it go? I have it. Okay.
Well, what was the world's population?
Exactly, yeah.
How many children under the age of 13 existed in that year?
Off screen, there are untold millions who are going to die as a result of the actions on screen. However, us audience members witness 7 characters killed on screen.
Although, you know, I'll throw this out there. Since the woman isn't a robot and then becomes a robot, we could presume maybe she's dead.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
So what if... all of the henchmen robots are like pod people, copies of real people of the town that have also been killed. Sense.
Wow.
That would even extrapolate the death toll.
Well, definitely 3 has the highest body count, it's impossible to really know.
So that put us to like from like 300 million to like 300 million and 22.
Okay, well, that is going to do it for part one of the Halloween marathon. Still plenty more movies to go. But in the meantime, if you have any suggestions for future marathons, be sure to email us at cinemarathon@gmail.com. And it's also worth mentioning that we've been discussing what to do for the holidays, and we never really done this, but we were thinking about maybe doing some sort of Christmas or holiday-themed marathon. But we were curious if anyone had any ideas about Christmas films that we could watch or any other holiday. So if you have a specific idea in that vein, be sure to email us at cinemarathon@gmail.com. And in addition to that, you can check out our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/cinemarathon, or our Twitter feed, which is @cinemarathonpod. And all of this information can be found on our website, which is cinemarathonpodcast.com. So thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.